Welcome to Ninja Your Life podcast with your host and Building Thriving Lives coach, Sonia Tam, where you're going to learn how to ninja your life physically, mentally, spiritually, and intuitively using the strategies from the intersection of positive psychology, clinical psychology, personal fitness training, mindfulness and meditation, and the time-tested wisdom from Sonia's 35-plus years as a martial artist and now 6-degree black belt master. Hi, Ninja Nation. How are you all today? How's your mind, body, and spirit doing? I want to welcome all of you to episode 7, and there is a long delay, I know, from 6 to 7. I've been working very hard on my book that I want to launch, and I'm also launching a body-mind fitness challenge in January of 2017. So I apologize to all of you. Thank you so much to those of you that have emailed me and messaged me awaiting the episode 7. It just makes me want to just do more podcasting. I wish there was about 10 of me right now. But it also is telling me that you like them and you're getting some value out of them. I'd love to hear more from you, including any kind of review or rating that you can do on iTunes. I would really love to see that. It gives me a chance to spread my message out there that no matter where you are in your life, that you can actually thrive in life every day and not just survive. You can actually vigorously grow on a mind, body, spirit, and intuitive basis. So today, well, first of all, I guess before I get into today's topic, I have to tell you that my cat, Rasa, has been very vocal today. In fact, she just meowed. Okay, here she comes. So I'm just going to leave this in the podcast, and I hope that you guys are okay with that. I'm sitting on my meditation cushion, and I am now petting her. She's just been one of those, having one of those days where she's feeling very needy. So if that is anybody who has seen her, she's on my Facebook, and she's a beautiful ragdoll cat. Her name is Rasa. So that is something you might hear during the podcast, is a little bit of meowing. The second thing is, some of you guys have asked me to share a little bit more personal information of myself and before I get into the topics of my podcast, so thank you. Okay, I will. I know some of you want some funny stories, and those of you that know me on a personal basis know that I can be kind of silly and playful, so I thought maybe I would open up some of my podcasts with something that I've done that's funny or something that I'm grateful for. So I guess today I'm going to start with something that just was silly that I did, and then we'll get onward with the podcast. Last night, my partner and I tried to write our names with our toes, and I have to tell you, I wasn't so bad. It was very legible, and it was kind of impressive. So there you go. I wrote my name with my toes. And, you know, I'm not going to do it as a habit, but there's something silly that I did. And actually, I laughed a lot doing it, so there you go. Increased my happiness quotient. So there you go. The topic for today is anxiety. So there's a good lead into that, huh? Anxiety. The reason why I chose this is because I actually am working on a chapter in my book on anxiety, because I think it's actually misunderstood, and also I've been trained by many mentors and teachers on how you can take the energy of anxiety and use it in a very productive way. But today I'm going to do this in two podcast episodes, so this one is just more for basic information, but definitely hang in there, please. There might be some really good insights or different perspectives on anxiety that you've never heard. So the grip of anxiety can be very intense, right? This is something that I know, and some of you listeners out there probably have had anxiety as well. As a child, I was wired for anxiety. I'm not regretful of that. Actually, it makes me a better coach and a better trainer so that I can help others get through it. And in my adulthood, I have to admit, I'm not 100% anxiety-free. I really don't know anybody who is. But at least I have now the awareness to stop it when it's still workable and doesn't put me through what I call the spiraling black hole. And when I get to that black hole is when it's just, you know, completely out of control. And those of you that have high anxiety probably know what I'm talking about, that it really locks you and it can bring you into catastrophic thinking and awfulizing. So today, you know, the first thing is, are you locked out of your life? You know, this is a good question for any of us. Anxiety and depression especially puts us on lockdown, and it can be very hardwired into our brain. So asking that question, are you locked out of your life with habitual thinking that causes anxiety? And some information on anxiety, because there are three things I want to cover here, is one, anxiety, two, stress, and three, worry. Because they are different, but they also overlap. So coming from my clinical psychology experience, I know this isn't talked about enough, because sometimes we say, oh, we're worrying and we have anxiety. We don't really know what the difference is. So today I wanted to talk a little bit about the difference so that you can actually, you know, identify it. And through identification and through naming it, we can actually tame it a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about anxiety first. There is this kind of underlying, anxiety is more of an actual feeling. It's in the gut, it's in the chest, it's fear-based, it's more dreadful. It has an emotional feeling to it. And in fact, it's in the limbic part of the brain, which is the emotional brain. So anxiety has this kind of feeling where there's something going to happen, the other shoe is going to drop. It's uncomfortable. There's an apprehension of dread. And it does, it lives in the stomach. And those of you that have this, you know, intensely will know that it does sometimes mess with your digestive process. But you know what? Anxiety actually impacts negatively all of our systems, our nervous system, our digestive system, and our respiratory system. So this is actually pretty important to talk about. And any of you that have children and noticing, you know, symptoms of anxiety already, as a child myself who had anxiety, it's really important to address it and to make sure the child is feeling safe and comfortable and can talk about it. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. So what are the symptoms? Well, first of all, anxiety has a physiological basis to it as well as stress does. So you will have the sweating, you'll have shortness of breath, your heart rate will increase. And the interesting thing that I find about anxiety is that sometimes it happens for no reason. You're just like having a perfectly fine day, maybe an 8 out of 10 day, and for some reason there's still like this anxiety living in the background. So that is actually called free-floating anxiety. And this is, you know, not necessarily thought-based first, but then all of a sudden it becomes thought-based because you have free-floating anxiety, and then all of a sudden your cognitive brain wants to create a thought about why you're feeling that way. So you also have something that's considered to be thought-driven anxiety. So this is, you know, where you have like catastrophic thinking or, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? There's this constant like in the background of, you know, there's this impending doom, constant thinking processes. So it can cause actually many, many other symptoms, but those are just some of the basic ones. And then you also have, of course, you know, panic attacks that can happen from anxiety, which is really, really uncomfortable. And those of you that have had panic attacks, I mean, you almost feel as if you're going to die. There's actually symptoms of chest pain, and usually you don't even know what's happening. And sometimes you don't even have any pre-symptoms before it happens. So anxiety has a lot of, I would say, it's very complex. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is, and then we'll sort of review again and go deeper, but I want to just, so anxiety is, you know, just important to know that it lives in the chest and the gut. It's fear, it's feeling based. It has an emotional limbic part of the brain that's involved into it. So you also have worry. Now this is more thinking function. Worry is actually more in the cortex, the front part of the brain. And it has like this sort of repetitive circular thinking to it. So if anxiety is more feeling, then worry is more of the thinking. So that is, the thing about worrying is that it can be effective, right? We can actually worry about something that is very real and that actually is something that we really need to worry about, because sometimes our solutions come from worry. And that is important because not all of this is bad. One of the things that we want to do is not judge good or bad. It just creates more tension and stress and worry and anxiety. So in the worry thinking patterns, we actually have, it's a type of thinking. Worry is a type of thinking. So it's kind of interesting to talk about the word imagination here, because we are very, very gifted being humans that we actually can imagine. We have imagination. Worriers, unfortunately, have a catastrophic, thought-driven imagination. And, you know, the expression worrying yourself sick or scaring yourself is pretty valid here. So it's very troubling, and to have this wiring of the brain to constantly worry. It's troubling, and it can ruminate, and it's definitely the opposite of being present in the moment. Because when we worry, we're most likely going to be future-based thinking, or we're worrying about our past. So we travel from future to past, and so of course it's opposite of presence. These are worry thoughts. So what would be the benefit of worrying, right? What's the benefit of the repetitive thinking? Well, if we can untangle a problem, a mess, we can untangle our concerns, then it is pretty advantageous. The disadvantage is, though, is, you know, not knowing what to do with it. So, and also knowing when to press the pause button on that, the stop button. So that's a little bit about worry. And also, too, I guess another thing to mention about worrying is that you don't want it to be a habit to allow the actual event or the person that's causing our worry to become bigger than it really is. And that's often the case, right? So most of the things that we are worrying about and ruminating over really never happen. And the unconscious level of the brain may think it didn't even happen because we worried enough about it, right? That's an interesting thought. This may be a reward that we think happens too. So worrying also may distract us from something deeper that's going on. This is a concern. If we are constantly worrying about something and distracted with that worry, then most likely we're not going to get to the deeper rooted issue that's going on. It prevents us from going deeper and sort of leaves us with unprocessed information. So those people that are worrying so much about things, you know, might be a survival mode in the very beginning, but if it's not taken care of, then there's unprocessed information and there's no healing. So some of these things can be difficult and painful to feel, of course. So the function of worry may be just working for a short period of time, but in the long run, it actually is not to our benefit. So that's, you know, usually worrying shows up in the thinking part of the brain, and anxiety is in the limbic part of the brain. And then the third thing I wanted to mention in this podcast was stress. So of course, all of us have stress in our lives, and it comes from all different places. I mean, it can be from paying our bills to trying to get to an event on time, being in Chicago traffic. Oh my goodness. The holidays are coming up. I don't know if you're already feeling stress about that, but that can cause stress. and relationships, new jobs, getting used to maybe living with a new partner, all of this can be very stressful, and it doesn't have to be bad or good. Now, stress actually is an actual physical response to a threat, real or imagined. So it's very interesting because we can imagine, here we are again with that imagination of the human brain, that capacity. If we imagine something, we can still feel the stress effects of it. And the physical response can happen whether it's an actual threat or not. So most are actually perceived and imagined. And all of a sudden, we get the stress hormones, that wonderful chemical cocktail of adrenaline, cortisol, and glucose. And it supercharges us to do amazing things. We can run really, really, really fast away from the threat, or we can fight. And of course, as a martial artist, you know, I kind of get a little excited talking about this part. The unfortunate thing about stress, though, is that a lot of us don't know when to turn the off button on for this either. And this button stays on. Now, that's a problem. So when we have the stress button on, we get sick. We get irritable. We get burnt out. And a lot of us get chronic fatigue. And some of us even get compassion fatigue. So this is really a problem, especially in the service fields and industries of teaching or therapy or coaching or even fitness training. So this is something that especially all of us need to know that are in the service industry, that we want to manage our stress so that we can be the best possible coach and trainer we can for our clients. And of course, all of you that are, you know, mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and all the roles that we play, stress management is extremely important because it really sucks the life out of us, especially if we don't know how to recover. See, stress isn't all that bad, again, in the short term, because it is actually sending us a signal. We're wonderfully wired for survival. The unfortunate part is when we don't recover. That's when we get sick, and that's when the body starts, you know, kind of showing us symptoms of something deeper. So stress is an actual physical response to threat, real or imagined. And, you know, it keeps, when we think about, well, what could happen, it keeps the on button on. So stress is necessary. You know, we need to get the blood flow to our large muscle groups. We need to have our senses heightened when there's a threat. We need to increase our heart rate. We need to increase our blood pressure. We need that adrenaline dump. And we need to have our blood clotting to get faster when we are threatened for real. And all of these stress hormones and chemicals, they burn up in about 20 to 30 minutes after the threat is done, and then we recover. Well, that's what's supposed to happen, actually. But does it really happen? And that's the concern. We want to be able to recover. So I hope I'm giving you a lot of information here about anxiety and stress and worry. And I hope I'm not giving you stress and worry and anxiety talking about it. Because remember, through awareness and education, we have choice. So the next thing I want to talk about is, you know, now that we know all of this, what can we do about it? And this is where I wanted to get another episode in as well. But just I'll give you a little flavor as to maybe some solutions. The first thing is that we want to be able to, there's a wonderful thing called self-directed neuroplasticity. And oh my gosh, is that a mouthful, right? What it really means is that you can use your own mind to change your brain, basically. So our ultimate self-care tool is to really work with our mind so that we can actually change our brain at the chemical and neural pathway level. So the thing I want to talk about is, now how do we do this? How do we change the brain through training our mind? Of course, the first thing is to relax, calm down, right? And just taking intentional, conscious breaths is so important, especially when you're in the face of a trigger. So taking something that I like to call three to be free is really important to do, especially when you're starting to feel the grip of anxiety. And you just take three big, slow, conscious breaths. The deep breathing, especially during the trigger. And you can see this in biofeedback, that you can literally slow down your blood pressure, your pulse. So the breathing changes you, and your muscle tension actually will start to decrease, and your body temperature changes. So breathing deeply invokes the relaxation response instead of the stress response. It does a complete opposite shift. Now, this can take months to practice because neuroplasticity doesn't happen overnight. And we can change our mind in a second, right? But to literally change our brain, because it is changeable, it's been proven time and time again with studies of neuroplasticity, and you can look that up and Google that, and you'll find all kinds of wonderful information. But so the brain is changeable, but it takes a while. It takes practice. Cells don't just, you know, die off and then that's the end of the cells. That's the good news, that we can actually change your brain no matter if you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. We can actually create new pathways. So we don't have to be wired for anxiety, and we don't have to be wired to constantly worry about things. We can change it. The brain can change. You can change your mind in a second, what it takes for weeks and months to do is to lay down that new hardwire and change the brain. And that's how we work on meditation and conscious breathing. Easy way to start this is to start thinking of things, okay? So that you can actually use your imagination and think of things that cause you worry. And you can take conscious breaths through just even thinking about your trigger. And this is a great practice. So this is one way to do that, to work with your anxiety. Is to take three deep breaths, think about your trigger, and so when it actually happens, you're already sort of practicing to calm down and tap into that relaxation response. The next thing I'd like to share with you is one of my all-time favorites, the Serenity Prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So what does this have to do with anxiety? It has a lot to do with anxiety. It's used in the 12 Steps program for a reason, right? We use this to measure the controllables and measure what are the uncontrollables. I love teaching this one to kids because sometimes they don't have that in their mind yet, what they can control and what they can't. I think it's our responsibility as adults and parents to allow them to, of course, make their own mistakes. That's super important. But also to kind of guide them through what they can control and what are the uncontrollables. And oh my gosh, I don't know about you, but I need this lesson every single day. This serenity prayer is, it gets me right to the wisdom mind. And I make, you know, better decisions. I make better I don't react so much, I respond instead, which to me is a little bit more wise. And, you know, if you don't like the Serenity Prayer because it's too religious for you, or if you feel like you prefer to be around people that are wise, then definitely use that as a source of wisdom. Talk to people that have wisdom, and that would be another awesome thing to do for anxiety, is to surround yourself with people that have, a source of wisdom, and they actually have been through some stuff that you've been through. Another thing is, you know, imagery is very helpful. You could think about people that you absolutely admire and think about, well, what would they do in this situation? What would this person do? During this time, I hesitate, but I'm still going to do it. I'm going to bring up Hillary Clinton. She actually was asked a question about a very difficult decision she had to make, and she said, I said to myself, what would Eleanor Roosevelt do? This is a perfect imagery thing for a solution for anxiety and for making good decisions under stress. What would Jesus do? What would Buddha do? What would, and then you fill in the blank. This is a very intelligent thing to do, to use imagery, to talk to wise people, to use some sort of prayer. I use the Serenity Prayer as an anchor. It helps you relax. It helps you take the time to slow down and come from a place that is of self-care and compassion under these overlapping things that we've been talking about today, which are worry, stress, and anxiety. So we got to be able to slow down. We have to be able to get quiet. We got to be able to drop into our inner wisdom. Use our resources for wisdom. And that relaxation response, which is in the sympathetic nervous system, really cuts into our fearful loop. But we got to practice this stuff. You know, it's okay to write down your worries and look at them and maybe separate them into columns. Go back to the Serenity Prayer. What are the things that I can change? What are the things I can't change? What are the things I don't know yet? Just writing them down might help you too. So this is what I want to talk about. Now, in my next podcast, I'm going to go a little bit more. We're going to dive more deeply into what the mindfulness community says about anxiety and maybe a little bit more wisdom as to how to manage and control it. I hope you enjoyed this today. I hope it wasn't too long. Would love to hear again some of your feedback, ratings, reviews of this, and if you would like to email me, you certainly can. Email me at buildingthrivinglives. Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, it's not that. It's, let's do this again, ninjayourlifewithsahnya@gmail.com. Or you can just go right to my website, ninjayourlife.com, and you can find my email list there too and ask a question. Have a wonderful day, everybody, and I look forward to hearing from you in the iTunes reviews, and I wish you all a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Halloween. Stay safe. Bye-bye.